The world is descending deeper and deeper into climate chaos. As fires rage and storms churn, we're about to blow past 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, which scientists and global leaders have agreed as the first point of no return for the planet. Past that mark, irreparable catastrophes might ignite like a row of dominoes. And it seems as if we're doing nothing to prevent it, as if we are spinning our wheels on climate action. It's not just 1.5 degrees Celsius. Under current climate policy, the world is on track to blow past 2 degrees, 2.5 degrees, and potentially even 3 degrees Celsius of warming. Meanwhile, climate deniers seize power across the world, and global climate negotiations fail to produce any sort of meaningful emissions cuts. How did we come to this? How have we continually bowed to the reign of fossil-fueled business as usual, despite mounting climate catastrophes? To unravel this question, we'll journey through the treacherous landscape of climate inaction. We'll examine the violent return of fossil fascists like Trump, the illusory fictions of carbon capture, all the way to the pernicious ideology of overshoot. Today, we examine how the world surrendered to climate collapse. This video was made possible by Ground News. Stick around to the end to find out how you can get 40% off Ground News. The damage of our current 1.3 degrees Celsius of warming has already been catastrophic. Wildfires raged through Los Angeles in early 2025, killing 29 and forcing over 200,000 people from their homes. Tropical cyclone Daniel decimated Libya in 2023, killing almost 6,000 with over 8,000 missing. Generational floods in Pakistan, Spain, and the US have decimated towns and livelihoods, while drought in Somalia, Kenya, and Ethiopia forces millions on the move. And as we burn more and more fossil fuels, these catastrophes will only become more numerous and devastating. This makes the task ahead of us clear. To avoid even more death and planetary destruction, we need to cut emissions to zero, which ultimately means confronting and dismantling fossil fuel production. In other words, any true climate action must eventually ban fossil fuel exploration, extraction, and production. One study found that to stay below 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, 89% of coal, 58% of oil, and 56% of gas reserves must be left in the ground by 2050. Ending fossil fuel production is not a radical agenda. Instead, it's one based on life, especially considering that 1 in 5 deaths are caused by air pollution from burning fossil fuels. Yet, despite the death toll and the immense body of climate science detailing the need to rapidly eliminate emissions, the dismantling of the fossil fuel industry is nowhere in sight. Indeed, the world, especially the Imperial Corps, seems to be doing the exact opposite. Fossil fuel companies are locking in infrastructure that won't be exhausted until as late as 2090. In 2022 alone, 477 gas pipelines, 432 new coal mines, and 485 new coal plants were slated for or were under construction. These assets, this fixed capital, mean potentially trillions of dollars in profit for fossil capitalists, or if climate action is taken seriously, trillions in losses. As this review of Carbon Lock-In explains, the fixed capital of the fossil fuel empire represents the largest network of infrastructure ever built, reflecting tens of trillions of dollars of assets in 2 centuries of technological evolution. But to reap maximum profits from this massive network of infrastructure, fossil capital must ensure its continued survival. They must relentlessly guard and prolong the lifespan of their assets. Enter Trump and the fossil fascist far right.
President Trump created the National Energy Dominance Council. It's going to accelerate domestic oil and gas production in America.
As I explained in this video, fossil capital has long protected itself by throwing its power and cash flows behind fascist figureheads eager to ensure business as usual. This is exactly what's happened with Trump's return to power. Fossil capitalists poured money into his campaign, and in exchange, Trump has already cut down barriers to and bolstered the flow of oil and gas. During his first few months in the White House, Trump placed oil executives and climate deniers to head the Department of Interior.
He wants us to drill, baby, drill, and we're gonna do that.
And energy. He cut down regulations for fossil fuels and has hacked at renewable and electrification subsidies. Essentially, while he scapegoats immigrants and people of color for America's problems, he's letting fossil capital set fire to the planet. And we're seeing this outside of the US as well, with the rise of Germany's far-right party, AfD, and Sweden's far-right party, among many others. Trump and his fossil fascist counterparts across the globe mark a new low in the descent into climate chaos and the consolidation of power in the hands of fossil capitalists. But the problem is that the current capitalist alternative to fossil fascism has also worked hand in hand to facilitate business as usual. Perhaps in a far less obvious way, liberal capitalist figureheads like Biden or Macron have spearheaded a response to global warming that has meant decades of inaction and the continued accumulation of power and profits in the hands of fossil capitalists. And key to the false action of these liberal leaders is the idea of climate overshoot. While Trump hands the reins of power to fossil capital, the other option capitalism presents us with, exemplified in Biden or even the German Green Party, seems to be doing the necessary climate work. They're hosting climate summits and making net zero pledges. But as we'll soon see, these leaders are just paying lip service to action while acquiescing to business as usual, to the relentless drive of fossil capitalism. The Biden administration, for example, oversaw a massive expansion of oil drilling on public lands, a fossil fuel buildout that outpaced even Trump's first presidential term. During his presidency, Biden expedited pipeline construction and facilitated record U.S. oil production. And as a result, under his administration, the U.S. retook its place as the global leading exporter of liquefied natural gas. In short, Biden, while championing his administration's environmental purity, was avoiding confronting and indeed at times aiding fossil capitalists. We even saw this in Germany, as its Green Party approved the destruction of the hamlet of Lützerath to expand a lignite coal mine. And in 2022, the Green Party's economy minister was elated after securing a 15-year liquid natural gas deal with Qatar, explaining 15 years is great, and then goes on to say, I wouldn't have anything against 20-year or even longer contracts. In short, liberal capitalist governments, while establishing some renewable and clean energy initiatives, are, in reality, overseeing the continued expansion of fossil fuel infrastructure and locking in decades more emissions. Liberal governments are avoiding the one solution that will actually lessen the blow of climate chaos, directly confronting and dismantling fossil fuel production. But how could this be? These capitalist liberals are supposed to be climate warriors, right? Aren't they supposed to be overseeing the renewable energy transition they've claimed so many times is on the horizon? The key piece to this contradiction, this doublethink, this failure of the Paris Agreement, the failure to contain global heating to 1.5 degrees Celsius, is the mythical promise of overshoot, an insidious tool of capitalist climate governments that allows world leaders to set goals and claim climate action while actually acquiescing to business as usual. But what is overshoot? The co-author of the book Overshoot, Andreas Malm, explains in an interview with The Breakdown.
So the idea of overshoot is basically that you can set a limit to global warming, and you can respect that limit by exceeding it and then returning to it.
Essentially, overshoot claims that the world can hurdle past 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, hit some determined peak of warming, and then in the future, when technologies are more developed and cheaper, use carbon capture to draw down emissions from the atmosphere, bringing global temperatures back below 1.5 degrees Celsius. Reading between the lines, this allows global leaders to do nothing right now. It allows them to claim that they are working to address climate change without having to directly confront fossil capital and destroy the immense profits born out of fossil fuel production. Unfortunately, overshoot has become institutionalized as the path forward. Most climate models and climate pledges are steeped in this overshoot ideology. According to Andreas Malm and Wim Carton in Overshoot, out of the 578 scenarios included in the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change's special report on 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming, 568 included some amount of overshoot. So just 10 scenarios did not rely on some future scaling up of carbon removal to save us from disaster. And the epicenter of this destructive overshoot ideology has been the annual Conference of Parties, more commonly known as COP, a yearly climate summit where fossil fuel barons can claim that 1.5 degrees Celsius is still the goal while they lock in more and more oil and gas infrastructure.
And send a clear signal that keeps 1.5 within reach.
These conferences have come to reveal the pageantry that is liberal capitalist climate action. Lacking any sort of binding legislation or contracts, the yearly COPs have become theater for world leaders to claim that they're doing the work. As Malm and Carton argue, the annual summits became occasions for the incantation of optimism about a win-win low-carbon transition already underway. What mattered is not what anyone did, but what these leaders appeared to be doing as seen from the audience floor. Overshoot has become an insidiously magical and effective tool for the capitalist elite. It allows for the contradiction of claiming that 1.5 degrees is the goal while doing the opposite, leaving climate actions for future generations and allowing for the continued scaling up of fossil fuel infrastructure. But why exactly is Overshoot bad? If we can capture carbon from the atmosphere in the future, why should we be worried right now? The concept of overshooting our climate targets and then attempting to reverse the damage that transgression has caused is a dangerous gamble, because the consequences of exceeding 1.5, 2, or even 2.5 degrees Celsius of warming will be irreversible and catastrophic. Under those temperatures, our landscapes will be transformed, extreme weather events will become more and more frequent and intense, and ecosystems will collapse. Not to mention sea levels will rise, displacing millions. One of the main problems is that the core of the Overshoot ideology is decidedly rotten, because faith in the success of Overshoot means a belief in the power of carbon capture. Whether through bioenergy carbon capture and storage or through direct air capture, the champions of Overshoot, and indeed the majority of climate action pathways, claim that we need a mass scale-up of carbon renewable technologies to scrape us back below 1.5 degrees Celsius. The problem is that these technologies are untested and unproven at a mass scale. Bioenergy carbon capture and storage, for example, would require land 1 to 2 times the size of India, as it relies on growing carbon-removing crops to burn and use for fuel. And as of 2023, there are only 6 plants in operation globally. Meanwhile, directly capturing carbon out of the air at a mass scale is essentially a pipe dream. While there are a few operational plants, they are just that, few and relatively ineffective. The current very optimistic rollout of direct carbon capture by 2030, which includes all projects still in the concept stage, still falls short of the 2050 net zero energy goal, according to the International Energy Agency. What's even more concerning is that these technologies currently represent less than 0.1% of all carbon removed from the atmosphere. Think about it this way. If we're already struggling to scale up renewables at a rapid pace, why on earth should we expect to do so with carbon removal, whose technologies are even more in a state of infancy? And to be clear, we would need a massive scale up of carbon capture technology. This paper estimates that up to 400 gigatons of carbon dioxide would need to be removed from the atmosphere by 2100 to limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. In emissions terms, that is the equivalent to running the US energy industry in reverse for around 80 years. These carbon capture technologies should be focused on eliminating and quickly abating any lingering sectors that we're still trying to decarbonize, not occupied with the emissions of business as usual and comparably easy sectors to switch to zero carbon. Essentially, Overshoot leans heavily on the fabrication of carbon capture. It claims that we can emit all we want now because someday down the road, we'll have carbon capture at a scale that can turn back the clock on the climate. But those promised technologies are unproven and untested at the scale many Overshoot pathways demand. Even if carbon capture technologies did work at the scale we needed them to, shooting past 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming will cause innumerable climate catastrophes while we wait for mass carbon capture deployment. Once we breach 1.5 degrees of warming and head towards 2 degrees, we increase the likelihood of irreversible tipping points. As Malm explains in an interview with The Breakdown,
so there's a cluster of these tipping points between 1.5 and 2 degrees. That's when the melting of the Greenland ice sheet becomes irreversible, which means 7 meters of sea level rise. Same with the West Antarctic ice sheet, same with the potential collapse of the Amazon into a savanna and the melting of the permafrost and all of this stuff.
So overshooting 1.5 degrees Celsius would mean the permanent death of coral reefs, the Amazon potentially turning into savanna, the complete meltdown of the Greenland and West Antarctic ice sheet, and the melting of boreal permafrost. All of which are irreversible. Put another way, no amount of carbon capture will be able to reverse the damage to coral reefs or ice sheets. We'll have sped past the point of no return. Our world would look very different even after the carbon capture is successful. Again, Malm argues,
you know, the true extremism here is not to insist on 1.5 degrees as a target, but it is to just let things continue in the hope that we can have some kind of techno fix towards the end of the century. If these tipping points are crossed, there's no going back.
In essence, overshoot condemns us to a world drastically different than the one we know and love today. And not only does overshoot draw us closer to catastrophic tipping points, but it also assures the continued death and destruction wrought by supercharged droughts, storms, floods, and fires. It means more storms like Daniel that decimated Libya, or even worse wildfires than those that hit Los Angeles earlier this year. And these disasters will affect poor and marginalized people the most, leading Malm and Carton to claim that overshoot is an act of paupercide. The ruling class is choosing business as usual in the pursuit of profits now in exchange for the immiseration of millions in the coming future. And given this destruction, why on earth should we put our faith in future capitalist leaders to do the heavy lifting when the current ones are avoiding the task of confronting fossil fuels at all costs? I'll say it again, overshoot is an immense gamble. One that ensures the deaths of millions and a cascade of tipping points in the hopes that untested technologies will someday save us. Overshoot exploits future generations so that the current ruling class may profit. Plain and simple. Malm and Carton compare it to hosting a massive party in which you let the guests set the roof on fire, flood the basement, and spoil the garden, only to then move out and leave the repair bill on the table for your children and grandchildren to take care of. And the longer we wait to confront fossil capital, to dismantle fossil fuel production, the deeper ingrained that production will become in our economy. Infrastructure, profits, and emissions will grow, making it even more difficult for future generations to scrape back below 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming. So overshoot is not the answer, nor is fossil fascism. The only way to avoid tipping points and prevent climate change is to directly confront fossil capital. To end fossil fuel use altogether. In 2022, leftist leader Gustavo Petro ascended to the Colombian presidency on a wave of mass democratic support. This was a moment in environmental history, because Petro, despite his name, was an unabashed climate warrior. Unlike the false promises of Biden or the German Green Party, Petro seems genuinely committed to cutting emissions. With a democratic mandate behind him, Petro announced and set in motion the phase-out of all fossil fuel production in Colombia. Petro is doing what no other state leader is doing. He is actually confronting fossil capital head-on and banning fossil fuels. Colombia is now a case study on state-led climate action, one that doesn't just scale up renewables, but also bans and dismantles fossil fuel production. Because the solution to climate change is quite simple. We must end the fossil fuel industry, which at its core means stranding billions, if not trillions of dollars in fossil fuel pipelines, rigs, mines, tankers, and so much more. This is an economy-shattering and revolutionary task in a world where so much is reliant on fossil fuels. Indeed, this paper estimates that stranding fossil fuel assets to meet 1.8 or 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming would mean a $13 to $17 trillion loss for oil and gas producers. The authors then write, "This implies a strong incentive for fossil fuel producers to continue resisting climate stabilization," which is why we're seeing the combination of overshoot ideology and fossil fascism burst into climate politics in the 21st century. And when you consider that the biggest banks are heavily invested in fossil fuel companies, while everything from plastics to food production runs on oil and gas extraction, the dismantling of the fossil fuel industry would mean a complete overhaul of the economy, a mass stranding of assets offsets on a scale we've never seen. According to the founder of the Carbon Tracker Initiative, halting fossil fuel extraction and production could mean economy-wide losses 4 or 5 times larger than the 2008 financial crisis. But the longer we wait, the larger the crisis will be. Fossil capitalists will continue to pour money into fixed capital in the form of oil wells, pipelines, and rigs the longer we keep delaying this confrontation. As Marxist philosopher Theodore Adorno writes, the more the system expands, the more it hardens into what it has always been. So the longer we wait, the more drastic the battle with fossil capital will be. It makes sense then why liberal capitalist leaders are so reluctant to confront fossil capital and end fossil fuel production. A 100% renewable world without fossil fuel emissions requires challenging the foundations of our capitalist economy. It means an escape from profit and capitalism, which is based heavily on fossil fuels. Overshoot allows leaders to ignore that challenge for now. The ruling classes can conveniently kick the can down the road to later generations. But this confrontation must happen eventually, and hopefully soon. Otherwise, the world will continue to heat up and descend further into climate chaos. A 100% renewable world without fossil fuels is possible. We just have to have the courage and organization to challenge capitalism and dismantle the fossil fuel empire. But right now, that fossil fuel empire is gaining steam, especially in the United States, where Trump has taken power once again and is attempting to rip down environmental policy left and right. It feels like every day there's a new executive action striking down ecological regulations, firing EPA workers, or censoring climate science. And then the next day, the motion is blocked in the courts. Like in the case of the USDA restoring climate change-related pages to their website after a lawsuit. Under Trump, and in this age of misinformation and media bias, it can be hard to actually know what's going on, especially with climate policy. Which is why I've been using this video's sponsor, Ground News, to peer past the curtain of media bias and stay up to date with Trump's anti-environmental agenda. For this story, of the more than 35 sources compiled, over 40% lean left, while less than 20% lean center. Comparing the headlines with Ground News' bias comparison, we can see how the contents of these articles differ. For example, left-leaning outlets frame the USDA's removal of climate change websites as a clear violation of federal law and a harmful censorship effort. While center-leaning outlets adopt a neutral, procedural tone, describing the restoration as a positive sign without casting blame. I've been using Ground News for a long time because of tools like bias comparison that helps make sense of Trump's anti-climate agenda. Ground News is a website and app that collects over 50,000 media sources into one place and lets you compare how headlines are being covered across the political spectrum. Every story comes with a quick visual breakdown of the political bias, factuality, and ownership of the sources reporting, all backed by ratings from 3 independent news monitoring organizations. And the layout of Ground News allows you to quickly compare headlines and articles to see what information is being emphasized or left out. I especially like the blind spot feed, which highlights stories that are disproportionately covered by one side of the political spectrum. Especially when it comes to news about climate change, I think it's really important to see what articles both sides of the political spectrum are missing, which is why I use Ground News literally every day. You can go to ground.news/OCC or scan the QR code on screen today to get 40% off their Vantage subscription, which includes a feature called My News Bias. It's basically a dashboard that visualizes your news diet over time. It shows your top news sources, whether you engage with different perspectives, what topics you're interested in, and a lot more. So go to ground.news/OCC, scan the QR code on screen, or click the link in the description today to support an independent news platform working to make the media landscape more transparent.